This is For a Minute There, I Lost Myself, a Ted Lasso fic written by Boasami Shipper and read by KLB. Within hours of handing Rebecca Welton his resignation, within hours of Richmond's promotion, Nate found himself the new head coach for West Ham. Truthfully, he didn't remember much of how the conversation with Rupert had gone, only how he'd muted the call to stick his head between his knees when they started talking about his salary. He could buy a new suit every day of the week, toss them all when he'd worn them once, and start over if he wanted to, with that kind of money. He could buy a taste of Athens and reserve the corner table for his dad permanently, carve his name into the wood so everyone, the servers, Jade the hostess, his parents, would know his reach, his power, and respect him for it. The Nathan Shelley table. He rather liked the sound of that. The moment Rupert hung up with the promise to call again the next day, signing off with more praise for Nate's talent that made his insides glow warm, Nate walked down the hall, opened his closet door, and tore the suit that Ted bought him off its hanger before stuffing it into a trash bag, where it was soon joined by every Richmond tracksuit he owned. The part of him that had spat, "You're a fucking joke," at Ted, with no remorse, wanted to take the bag out then and there, stuff it into a bin and leave it behind, but he kicked the bag into the back of his closet instead. He'd keep them, he decided, as a reminder of how far he'd come. The contracts were signed by week's end over glasses of very good brandy, and Rupert extended his hand, smiling in a way Nate had never quite known. Perhaps this was what it felt like to be smiled at by someone who respected you. His grip was firm. Nate hoped his own palm wasn't as sweaty as he thought it was. "I'm glad I got you before anyone else could snatch up a man of your talent, Nathan," he said. "You were shockingly underutilized at Richmond." He'd said the same at Paul Welton's funeral, the first time they'd spoken. Or the tenth, technically, but Nate didn't hold Rupert not remembering against him. Back then, he'd just been the kit man, a nobody, pathetic like Will. Now, he was someone. He just hadn't known for sure until Rupert had said so. With the Wunderkind at the helm, West Ham will be unbeatable. Something in Nate's chest loosened at last. "Wow," he said on reflex, and then immediately hated himself for it. He straightened in his seat, cleared his throat. "I'm glad you think so, Mr. Mannion." "I know so," Rupert said, with another smile that made his eyes twinkle. "And please, Coach Shelley, call me Rupert." Coach Shelley. God, but Nate could get used to that. For the first few training sessions, Nate let his assistant coaches, he was the one in charge, and Christ, if it didn't feel good, take the lead, while he watched from the sidelines and took notes. Some players Nate remembered from previous Richmond matches. Others were new, fresh arrivals from the summer transfer window and re-arrivals from the injury list. There wasn't any goofing off on the pitch. His pitch, which Nate liked. These were footballers, professionals who knew what the fuck they were doing. They were interested in the sport and only the sport, not in putting up believe signs, spraying Americanisms, or joining anonymous dating apps. They were players who could do justice to his plays. Most of them, anyways. Taylor and Schofield, left and right wingers, were overtough and indecisive, respectively, more interested in doing just enough to get by than working hard to be the best. Robani, 21-year-old transfer fullback from Maccabi Haifa, was overeager, asked for feedback constantly, and took none of it to heart the next day. Magnussen missed more saves than he had stories about growing up in Iceland, which was saying something. And Vizhnich, center forward, showed up late every morning and was the first to leave every night. He came alive on the pitch and died when he left it. As long as Vizhnich stayed that way, Nate resolved to let him be. Rupert came down the day before their friendly against Osasuna and gave Nate an approving nod when Nate ran him through what he was planning on having the team do. His assistant coaches stood a ways to the side, watching the players go at it. A few feet to their right was their social media manager, snapping photos. Nate had printed out the Instagram post she'd made about him, in which he had been titled, "Coach Shelley, the West Ham Wonderkind," sent copies to his parents, and stuck it on his refrigerator. Sam, Danny, Isaac, and Jamie had all commented underneath it with fire emojis, 100 emojis, and messages of congratulations. He'd refused to look at them for too long, or at the texts Keely and Ted had sent him, offering their own congratulations. His dad hadn't said a word when Nate showed him, just huffed and turned the page of his newspaper. The only thing Nate was surprised by was how much that dismissal hurt. "I'm pleased to see you've settled in well, Coach Shelley," Rupert said, after Nate blew the whistle. No inside whistles at West Ham. God, how had he let Ted and Beard and Roy treat him like a child for so long? And the players broke formation and ran for the kit man. The players treated Chris well enough, like a co-worker, not a friend, not at all like the Richmond players treated Will, or Nate himself. Nate wasn't sure how to feel about that. "The players seemed to respond to you well." "Coach? Excuse me, coach?" Nate sighed and turned around, irritated at the interruption, and then even more so by the fact that Robani wasn't wearing a shirt. He was more allergic to staying clothed than Jamie had been. "Yeah?" "Coach, I wanted to thank you once again for your advice on my cross. I feel much less off balance now." "Don't thank me until I see some consistent improvement," Nate said. Robani's smile faltered, which made Nate's stomach twist uncomfortably. If Rupert weren't standing beside him, maybe he would have explained himself. But Rupert had hired him to be a tough coach, the man he never could be at Richmond. "Get some water, Robani, and put your shirt on before you burn." Robani nodded. "Yes, coach." "Nicely handled," Rupert said once Robani had left, which made most of the knots in Nate's stomach dissolve. "They don't need you holding their hand. You aren't Ted Lasso, after all." Out of the corner of his eye, Nate saw Vizhnich drape an arm over Robani's shoulders, hand him a cup of sports mix. He couldn't make out what Vizhnich was saying, but it made Robani perk up. Good. He'd leave the coddling to the players. "No," he said. It hadn't been a question, but he knew Rupert expected an answer. Confirmation. "No, I'm not." West Ham flattened Osasuna, drew against Juventus, and narrowly beat Getafe. They would have won the latter outright if Magnussen would just lie back and think of Stratford instead of Habner Fjorda once in a while, or if Robani got his head out of the clouds and kept his eyes on the man he was marking. Richmond lost all three of their friendlies that July, which made Nate feel simultaneously guilty and vindicated. Let Ted see what it was like coaching without the West Ham wonderkind doing all the work. Then Ted would see. They would all see. They'd be sorry they ever ignored and underappreciated him. Ted, however, seemed remarkably undeterred by the team's bad luck. "We've come back from worse," he said in an interview that Nate found while scrolling through Twitter the night before the start of the Premier League season. The post had been tagged with his name, and Nate wasn't sure why until he heard the reporters ask if Ted attributed Richmond's streak of losses to having lost his assistant coach to the Hammers. Ted didn't even hesitate in his answers.
No, just weren't our days, any of them. We're all real happy for Nate round here. The Hammers are lucky to have him. Got no doubt they'll be giving us Greyhounds a run for our money when we go head-to-head in October.
But he didn't look at the camera as he said it, and Nate gripped the phone so hard that his knuckles paled. That figured. Of course Ted didn't appreciate him when he was there, and Ted didn't appreciate what Nate had given the team. Blood, sweat, tears, a coherent strategy, now that he was gone. Fucking joke, Ted was. Why did Nate expect any differently? He knew from experience that once someone stopped appreciating you, there was no getting that appreciation back. He was in such a towering mood that the Hammers all stopped speaking at once when he swept into London Stadium the next day. Vizhnich kicked Taylor's shin when he made a crack about Arsenal, their opponents that afternoon, while Nate was going over their strategy once more, and he steered Robaney out of the room before Robaney could ask Nate anything. The tiny part of Nate's brain that wasn't still engulfed in sharp rage and sharper heartbreak appreciated that, and a slightly larger part was cognizant that maybe he should have asked if the team had any questions, because they played like they'd never heard of a 5-4-1 formation in their lives. Magnussen saved one goal and let in two by halftime. Taylor and Schofield weren't in sync, and Robaney... Christ. Nate didn't even know where to begin with Robaney. "Robaney," he said, striding into the locker room with his assistant coaches in tow. He enjoyed watching the Hammers all flinch a little and straighten out of respect, the way the Greyhounds had for Roy and Beard and Ted. "Oi, Robaney, you want to explain why you've been passing like you're playing in the Under-9 Girls League? You need a reminder which league signed you? Which team signs your paychecks?" Robaney was standing practically at attention, his jaw clenching and unclenching. He had his hands behind his back and kept his eyes just a shade above Nate's head. He was taller than Nate, most of the team was, and in this moment, it just made Nate angrier.
"Are you fucking mute, Robaney?"
"No, coach," Robaney said at once.
"You have an answer for me?"
"I'm sorry, coach."
Ted would have burst out with a whole speech about goldfish and folksy Americanisms. He would have told Robaney to keep his head up, that his mistakes didn't define him, that he was a valued member of the team, win or lose. But Nate wasn't Ted.
"If you don't have your head in the game, Robaney, you're not doing this team any favors. And if you're not helping this team, you've got no business starting."
I can help the team, coach," Robaney said.
Nate heard the pleading note beneath the gruffness, saw the sheen of barely restrained tears. Nate refused to be swayed by them.
"Then act like it."
Nate knew from Roy that half of intimidation came from the beauty of a well-timed exit, so he turned on his heel and walked into his office, slamming the door shut behind him. His assistant coaches stayed out there with the team, and Nate sat down hard at his desk, pulling out his phone. Rupert had sent him a message, saying he hoped that the team would not start their season on a sour note, and Richmond, who were playing Aston Villa today, were up 2 already. Half of Twitter was wondering whether the Wonder Kid had lost his magic touch, and the other half kept retweeting a video of Ted, Beard, and Roy dancing hand in hand after Danny Rojas's goal. They were seamless and joyful, in perfect sync, like Nate had never been part of their group at all. It turned out that Robeni responded well to a tough approach because he played in the second half like he'd never get the chance to play again. He assisted 2 goals in 20 minutes, and Vizhnich scored in the 81st minute, securing 3 points for West Ham. And according to Twitter, Sam and Jamie had come through with another 2 goals in the second half, giving Richmond 3 points as well, which was good. Yes, it was good. The better Richmond played now, the more their defeat to West Ham in October would sting. "Well done, you!" Kissy face emoji, Keely had texted him. Nate had left her on red, sure that her emoji was double-edged. "Coach," Vizhnich said that night. It was one of the first times Vizhnich had addressed him directly all season, and Nate stopped in the car park with his keys halfway out of his pocket. "I'd like a word." He was speaking so quietly that Nate had to step closer to hear him. In fact, this close, Vizhnich didn't look too good. He had dark circles under his eyes, and his skin was waxen and yellowish. "Of course," Nate said, then backtracked, trying to make himself sound more professional, like a coach. Part of him was still afraid that if he stepped out of the role for a single second, he'd never be able to slip into it again. "What can I do for you, Vizhnich?" No, that wasn't right either. That wasn't coach-like. A real coach would have said, "What do you want? What do you need?" He shouldn't imply that Vizhnich was on higher ground than him. But it was too late to fix it, because Vizhnich was stepping closer and saying, "You can stop being a shit to my teammates and be the coach they deserve." Nate was so taken aback that for a moment all he could do was blink. Then anger crept in like the tide. "Excuse me? You have been a shit, Coach Shelley," Vizhnich says. He could have given Jan Moss a run for his money in bluntness. His accent was soft, but his tone was uncompromising. "An intolerable shit. A zhupak to everyone who would like nothing more than to learn from you and bring this club glory." Nate felt himself splutter and hated himself for it. He drew himself up, trying to channel his inner Roy, his inner Rebecca Welton, making herself big before a meeting with other club owners. "If you're talking about today with Robeni, I am not speaking on behalf of Natan," Vizhnich said sharply. "I am speaking on behalf of all of us. This conversation has needed to happen since Mr. Mannion hired you." "Excuse me?" "We would like to win as much as you do," Vizhnich said. "You know this. But we would also appreciate not being torn apart by someone who takes more pleasure in doing so than raising us up when we need it." "I'm not here to hold your hand, Vizhnich," Nate said tightly, desperate to regain the upper hand in this conversation. Vizhnich was the same height as him, and yet he seemed to loom over Nate like a tower. An expressionless, disappointed tower. "I'm here to..." "You are here to coach us," Vizhnich cut in. "You were hired to be a coach, and we would like you to act like one." Nate opened his mouth to argue, but found nothing in his arsenal of comebacks that would hit just as hard. Just as slowly as it had crept in, his anger ebbed, leaving him wrung out and empty and exhausted under Vizhnich's hard stare. What Vizhnich had said was true. Rupert had hired him to be a coach, and a coach was supposed to encourage players, build them up and bring them down to earth in equal measures, whenever they needed it. So far, Nate had only done the latter, and the latter had worked, for the most part. West Ham trounced Arsenal today because he'd used tough love to get Robeni out of his own head. Only Robeni didn't know that, did he? He didn't know why Nate had told him that. Taylor and Schofield and Magnussen and Vizhnich and all the rest didn't know that when Nate picked their playing apart, yelled at them, was the tough big dog with them, it was because he wanted them to play better for the club's sake.
You were hired to be a coach, and we would like you to act like one.
Rupert had hired him to be a coach. The team wanted him to help them. Not Ted, not Beard, not Roy. They wanted Coach Shelley. Not Nate, the cocky, prickish, wounded butterfly's arsehole who'd called Colin a Holiday Inn painting. They trusted him to help them, to do more than knock them down a peg when necessary. They wanted a coach, and he hadn't been the kind they needed. And if the team suffered because of their coach, if that got out to the press, to Ted, what would that say about him?
Vizhnich was still waiting. Nate cleared his throat, realizing distantly that his eyes were a little wet.
You're right, he said roughly. I haven't been the coach you all need. I've been a shit. I'm sorry, Vizhnich. I'll do better. I will.
Vizhnich nodded once. Good, he said, blunt. He was already turning away. See that you do. And Nate did.
He tried, anyway, but it was like Sam said. What was worse was not to try at all. He tried not to yell at Taylor and Schofield when they messed up a play on their first attempt, or on their tenth. He tried to keep his irritation on the inside when he answered Robani's questions about things he'd already explained in depth. He tried to let Magnussen finish a story before he cut him off, and he tried not to let the stiff way the players held themselves around him, like they didn't dare let their guard down around him for fear of being mocked, get to him. They lost their next match, and the one after that. Rupert came to training on Thursday and Friday afternoon and didn't seem particularly pleased with Nate's new approach.
I hope your new method isn't the cause of our last two losses, Coach Shelley.
Nate hoped so, too. It isn't, he said, hoping he sounded sufficiently sure of himself. Like Ted when he talked about barbecue sauce, or Jamie when he talked about anything. Man City and Crystal Palace were flukes. The Spurs match will put us back on track. At first, the Spurs match seemed very much like Nate had jinxed himself. One of the Spurs midfielders got past O'Malley, who was subbing in for Magnussen, and Reynolds missed an easy penalty kick. But Robani sent the ball to Vizhnich in a cross so perfect it actually brought tears to Nate's eyes, and Vizhnich scored, tying the game at the stroke of halftime.
Good work, all of you, Nate said in the locker room, meaning it.
Vizhnich, Robani, great interplay. Vizhnich and Robani bumped shoulders and endured hair tousling from their teammates. Nate was tempted to blow his whistle to get everyone's attention back on him, but the Hammers focused up right quick.
Now, I know you've only run this one a few times in training, he said, but their defense is only going to break down with attacks down the wings. Taylor, Schofield, we're counting on you.
We won't let you down, coach, Taylor said, and Schofield snapped a salute.
I know, Nate said. The lie tasted overly sweet on his tongue, but he knew it was what they needed to hear to have the confidence to succeed.
Let's show them what we've got.
Nate's wing play worked beautifully. Taylor and Schofield came through, and Robani scored in the 75th minute to an explosion of cheers and shouts of, "Row, row, Robani, Haifa's greatest love machine!" Then, at the 89th minute, the entire stadium went silent all at once when Vizhnich took a ball to the gut, stumbled back, and threw up in the sidelines.
Nate winced at the jeers of the Spurs fans. That would be trending on Twitter before the afternoon was out. Nate couldn't get Vizhnich's clenched jaw and reddened face off his mind, not even after the journos cornered him on the way back inside and draped him in glowing praise for his wing play. The questions of Jess Jacobs, the Guardian, might as well have been in Swahili for all Nate could understand them, or care about them. "Thank you," he said abruptly, cutting her off. "Really, thanks, but sorry, gotta move on. Talk to the team. Life of a coach, you know?" Nate found Vizhnich in the private car park, sitting on the hood of his car with a cigarette between his middle and index fingers. He made a mental note to thank Robani for pointing him in the right direction. "Those things will kill you, you know?" Vizhnich grunted. "My mother says the same," he says. He wiped his free hand on his Adidas tracksuit bottoms. "Yet she has smoked since she was 12, and she will likely outlive the last cockroach." "My dad doesn't smoke," Nate says. "Well, a pipe sometimes, but not cigarettes. My mom won't allow it in the house. She found a pack of cigarettes under my bed once. I never even opened the pack, but Christ, I'd never been so embarrassed in my life." "I sympathize," Vizhnich said. Nate swallowed hard and joined him on the hood. A few of the players passed by, offering Vizhnich a wave and sympathetic smile. "You know," he said, "I called myself a wonder kid in an interview last season instead of a wunderkind. Meant to say wunderkind, but I forgot the word, and my..." Nate's voice cut off, and he busied himself with brushing imaginary dust off the collar of his suit jacket before he continued. Vizhnich didn't seem to notice. "Well, fans made fun of me for it. And some of the Greyhounds teased me for my gaffe, too. They gave me a Wonder Kid jersey to rub in my mistake." Vizhnich glanced at him, sidelong. "I would have thought they did that as a show of support," he says. "A custom jersey is an expensive way to tease someone." Nate startled, and then pressed forward before he could think about that any further. He had a point to make. "My point is," he says, "nobody teases me for it now, because more embarrassing things have happened in the world of football since then. People will forget." Vizhnich shook his head. "It is different for you," he said dully. "You have made something of yourself. People associate being a successful coach with you now more than your wunderkind gaffe. Before this year, I was on the reserve squad for 3 years. I barely got any minutes on the pitch. And now, this season, when I finally am able to play more, to make a name for myself in this league, this happens." He tossed his cigarette onto the asphalt, where it smoldered and went out. His voice was very rough. "And now I will be forever known here as the puker from Pozhaga." "Nice alliteration," Nate said automatically, before wincing, but Vizhnich actually laughed. "Thank you, coach." Nate gripped Vizhnich's shoulder. "You're all right, Vizhnich," he said simply. "Keep playing the way you have been, and the world'll have great things to associate with you before long. You'll be the Supreme Slavonian?" Nate smiled. The muscles of his face felt rather stiff. He wondered when the last time he'd done so, and meant it, was. "Exactly." The corner of Vizhnich's mouth quirked up. "Thank you, coach," he said, and clapped Nate's shoulder in exchange before hopping off the hood of the car. Nate did the same, and for a brief, shining moment, felt happier than he had in months. Did Ted feel like this every time he was able to cheer up a player in need? See you tomorrow. West Ham beat Leicester City, lost to Leeds United, and drew to Liverpool.
Richmond lost to Brighton and Everton and drew to Man City. October 8th loomed like a court date. The press were calling Richmond-West Ham the showdown of the century, pinning Nate against Ted, former acquaintances turned rivals. Rupert kept encouraging him to slander Ted at every turn. "He and Rebecca underutilized you," he kept saying, with visible frustration. "They belittled you. Be the big dog, Coach Shelley. Bite back." A small part of Nate, all right, a fairly large part, wanted to be angry. He wanted to gloat in the face of Richmond's poor record, shout to the stars how this proved that Richmond had only done as well as they had because of him, that this was what Ted deserved for abandoning him. The majority of him was too exhausted from coaching and planning and strategizing to feel anything other than the urge to have a strong drink and go into a light coma. The drink part would have to be put on hold for some time, at least for the season, as Vizhnich was trying to stay sober and the team had all taken a voluntary abstinence from alcohol pledge in solidarity, coaches included. Part of Nate wondered if Ted would have done that too. The rest of him knew the answer and wondered if he would ever do something good as a coach that Ted hadn't already done first and better. A good chunk of his time was spent working with Robaney, who had a confidence problem more than anything. Nate had settled on an approach that was somewhere between tough love and goldfish metaphors. "You second-guess yourself too much out there," he had told Robaney after a particularly grueling training session near the end of September, right before their match against Liverpool. "You've been underperforming since you got here from Israel, and people underestimate you. Or they think you don't care about the game."
"I care, coach," Robaney had said at once. "For me, football is life."
Nate's lungs had constricted. "I know," he had said, "but they don't. If football is life for you, Robaney, then show it when you play." For the Liverpool match and the days that followed, Robaney showed it, and his game improved exponentially. He ran circles around everyone on the pitch, bolting forward on offense and then sprinting back on defense to support the center backs. "I owe it all to the help of my coach," Robaney said in an interview after the Liverpool match, waving off the reporter's praise with a humble, though no less bright, smile. "He believed in me and pushed me hard. I owe him everything." If Nate saved that interview clip to his camera roll, that was no one's business but his own. That same determination that had lit up Robaney like a Christmas tree, or a menorah in Robaney's case, for the past 2 weeks was nowhere to be found on October 5th. Robaney was slow to react, sluggish when he ran, and kept stopping to rub his temples. At first, Nate thought he'd caught a little too much sun. It was remarkably hot out for October. That was global warming for you, as his dad would have said to the newspaper, and he blew his whistle. "Robaney," he said, and then sharper when Robaney didn't react, "Oi, Robaney!" He strode across the pitch, and Robaney turned as if moving through molasses. Vizhnich, Ivanov, and Schofield stopped what they were doing and watched. "What have we talked about, Robaney? Keep your eyes on the prize!" In the split second it took Robaney to meet Nate's eyes, a cold hand gripped Nate's heart and squeezed. Robaney was bloodless white and sweaty beneath his tan, his gaze listless, his chest rising and falling all too quickly. And then he collapsed to the ground. It wasn't slow, and it wasn't graceful. Robaney fell like all of his muscles had given out at once, like his knees no longer had the strength to keep him standing. He just fell, his head audibly smacking against the ground on impact, and not one single person, player or coach, did anything other than stare. Not one of them breathed, not one of them moved. And after all that happened in the span of one uncomprehending second, and Robaney didn't jackknife back to his feet with a grin and a determined gleam in his eye, everything jumped back into play all at once. Vizhnich lunged for him, and Taylor swore so violently that Nate's mother would have shoved a bar of soap down his throat for even daring to say a syllable of it, and one of the assistant coaches went running for the physios. By the time Nate got around to moving himself, Robaney was coming too, blinking blearily up at Vizhnich and a terrified-looking Magnussen. Robaney muttered something in Hebrew and waved away Taylor's proffered bottle of water. "Can't."
"Don't be an idiot, bruv," Schofield said. "Your God won't hold it against you if you drink something after you fainted."
And Nate thought about that and, "If football is life to you, Robaney, then show it," and suddenly felt extremely guilty the moment it clicked what day this was, only for the guilt to abate into confusion. Robaney had requested off on Yom Kippur in August, and Nate had given his permission. What the hell was Robaney doing here when he was supposed to be fasting? Magnussen apparently had asked the same question, because Robaney mumbled, "Had to."
"My God, Robaney," Nate snapped, guilt roaring like thunder in his ears. "When I told you to act like football was life, I didn't mean you had to show up to training when you were fasting. We don't need you here,"
which was a lie,
"if you're not at full strength,"
which was the truth.
"I have to prove I'm good enough to stay, coach," Robaney muttered, with words slightly muffled by the 6 water bottles being shoved at his mouth.
His eyes were closed. Vizhnich tore off his own shirt, dumped water on it, and started wiping Robaney's forehead with it as the physios tore onto the field.
"I have to," Mannion said.
Nate's entire body went stiff. Rupert had told Robaney to come to training when he was fasting. Rupert had undermined Nate's authority as a coach. Mannion said. Rage came on so suddenly that it completely overwhelmed him, tinging the edge of his vision black and freezing his blood where it flowed. Nate turned on his heel and crossed the pitch in 4 long strides, storming past physios and his assistant coach on his way into Rush Green. Nate barely registered the shock on Rupert's face when he suddenly appeared in the doorway to his office. He'd never come up here without an invitation, but Nate was too furious to give a damn about all the social protocols he was breaking just by standing here, let alone all the ones he would break when he opened his mouth.
"Where the hell do you get off," he fumed, "undermining my authority as a coach? Telling one of my boys that he has to show up to training on Yom Kippur after I told him he could have off?"
Rupert gaped for exactly 2 more seconds before his expression smoothed out into something that Nate, even in the boiling heat of his rage, recognized. An oily and untrustworthy smoothness. A practiced, patronizing smoothness. "You told me when I hired you," he said, "that you were angry that you were underutilized at Richmond. Saturday's match will be your chance to prove how wrong Ted Lasso was to do that to you, Coach Shelley. The chance I know you have been waiting for. For that to occur, I knew you would need every day of training you could get, with the full team present."
"That's not... I didn't want this!" Robaney fainted, and you, Nate raged, jabbing a finger at Rupert, "you told him he had to come to prove that he was good enough to stay, to prove to me that he was good enough. I don't care what your intentions were, Rupert. I don't care what you thought. The next time you decide to undermine my authority as a coach, I'll..."
Rupert actually laughed.
"You'll what?" he challenged.
"Quit?" The word was like a slap in the face,
shocking Nate out of the worst of his rage all at once. It was deathly silent in the room as they glared at one another, and slowly Nate's temper began to fade as his mind began to work. No, he wouldn't quit. He couldn't quit. And for once, the reason why had nothing to do with his reputation as the West Ham wunderkind, or what people would think of him for quitting two clubs in the same year, or what Ted would think of him for quitting right before their showdown of the century. If he quit now, and Rupert replaced him with a sycophant or an incompetent or both, the players would suffer. That sort of new coach wouldn't know how to handle Taylor and Schofield, or when to step in when Magnussen's stories got too long-winded, or how to work with Robani and Vizhnich when they got trapped in their own heads. That new coach would let Rupert undermine his authority, would let Rupert force the players, Nate's players, his boys, into situations that could hurt them if it meant a better chance at winning the title in the end. If it meant a better chance at beating Richmond for the title in the end. The realization sank in like ice water, leaking into a dark, bitter cavern. Because that was why Rupert had hired him, wasn't it? Not because of his talent for strategy, or because Richmond had underutilized him. Rupert's goal wasn't West Ham's success, but Richmond's downfall, and he'd hired Nate to ensure it. From Paul Welton's funeral onward, he'd purposefully plied Nate with glowing praise and stoked the fire of Nate's hurt at Ted's abandonment, pulling Nate's strings without Nate even knowing it. If Beard or Roy had been in a similar place, Rupert would have manipulated them, too. Nate was just a means to an end. "I thought not," Rupert was saying quietly. There was a triumphant fire in his eyes that Nate knew well, a fire that cast the true Rupert Mannion into the light. Nate had been bullied enough to recognize a bully when he saw one. "If I were you, Coach Shelley, I would get out of here before you say something you really regret." With no other recourse and a whirling mind, Nate did just that. That night, Nate couldn't sleep. He kept tossing and turning, fluffing and flattening his pillow, unable to nod off. Vizhnich had taken Robani home. The entire team had pledged to keep an eye on him to make sure he slept and ate and didn't overexert himself. He'd been steady when Nate had dismissed everyone for the day, but Nate couldn't stop seeing him fall, or the looks of terror on everyone's faces, or the triumphant gleam in Rupert's eyes. He tossed the covers off himself and walked into his bathroom, splashed cold water on his face from the sink while his mind raced. He was caught between a rock and a hard place like he'd never known. He couldn't quit, not without hurting his team, let alone his reputation. But he couldn't stay at West Ham either now that he knew why Rupert had really hired him, nor could he see any sort of way to get Rupert back, not without his players ending up as collateral damage. Nate lifted his head and stared at his reflection, at the lines around his eyes and the hair that he'd long since stopped dying. He wanted to spit at himself for being so stupid, for letting Rupert manipulate him into thinking that Richmond was beneath him, for being grateful that Rupert had, because of how much better Nate felt about himself as a coach, as a man, since he'd come to West Ham. His players respected him. The world of football respected him, whether he acted like a wanker or not. He respected himself. But that wouldn't stick if he stayed here.
or if he left. He'd burned all of his bridges. Keely surely hated him for trying to make a move on her. Why shouldn't she? Nate hated himself for it. She and Roy were engaged now. Nate hadn't sent his congratulations or even liked her Instagram post that said so. Rebecca had never liked him to begin with. Beard knew for sure that Nate had leaked Ted's secrets to Trent Krim and would just as soon headbutt Nate as help him. Roy wouldn't give him the time of day. There was nobody who could help him. There's one person who can. No. Ted could help. Nate remembered the rush of satisfaction he'd taken in climbing onto a chair to tear the Believe poster off the wall and rip it in two. Telling Ted he was a fucking joke, bringing up Henry just to hurt him the way he'd hurt Nate. Ted wouldn't help him. Nate wouldn't if he were in Ted's shoes. It's not helping you. It's helping your players. He's a coach, too. Try. Nate stared at himself, resolute. Yes, for his players, he would try. Because what was worse would be to stay silent and keep the truth bottled up inside of him. What would be worse would be not to try at all. You are Coach fucking Shelley, he said firmly. Act like it. Ted was waiting for him outside his flat, wearing striped pajama pants, a Wichita State sweatshirt, and fuzzy slippers. Nate felt like an overdressed wanker in his best suit. He looked wan and tired, better than he had the night he'd signed his divorce papers, but not by much. He wasn't smiling, for which Nate was grateful. He would have felt worse if Ted was. Lo, Nate, long time. Months ago, Nate would have lifted his chin haughtily and said, "It's Nathan," or something equally biting and cruel. Now all Nate could do was nod. "Can I come in?" Ted's flat was largely the same as Nate remembered, though nothing was in boxes anymore. It was clean. There was a book called Anxiety and You on the coffee table in the sitting room, bookmarked and half-covered by a bibliography of Herb Brooks, and it made Nate feel like someone had reached into his gut, taken his internal organs, and twisted them up like a slinky. "Tea?" Nate turned. "No," he said. "No, I'm all right." "Good," Ted said. "Actually, I don't think I have any tea bags in the first place, so..." God, this was awkward. Painfully awkward. But not as painfully awkward as the rest of Nate's career would be if he didn't get this out. "Rupert Mannion hired me to bring Richmond down." To his everlasting credit, Ted didn't look surprised. He didn't look anything, really, other than stiff and pained, the same way he had when Nate had brought up his son. How old was Henry now? Had Ted visited him over the summer? "You know that for sure?" "Yes," Nate said. "I mean, no, not for sure. He didn't come out and say so, but..." He was babbling now, and he bit the inside of his cheek to make himself stop being Nate, to start being Coach Shelley. "I know." "I believe you," Ted said, and somehow that just made Nate feel worse. "He doesn't care about the players or the good of the club. He doesn't care about me. All he cares about is showing Richmond up. I..." Nate's throat closed up. "I can't stay,
and I can't leave them, and I don't know what to do.
Them?
The players, Nate said. Then, quieter, my players.
There was a tiny, proud smile in the corner of Ted's mouth. It was the type of smile that Nate would have killed a man to earn last season. Your players, Nate looked away. He was desperate to get the conversation back on track and couldn't do it with Ted looking at him like that. And his breath caught in his chest when he saw the mantle. He moved closer, blinking hard. There was a picture of Ted's ex-wife and one of the Greyhounds and several of Henry. And there, front and center, was the photo that Nate had given Ted for Christmas.
"You kept it," he croaked.
Ted's voice was just as quiet.
"Course I did."
To his horror, Nate's eyes flooded with hot tears. Of course Ted kept the photo. Of course he had. And of course Will and the Greyhounds hadn't meant anything but affection with their Wonder Kid jersey. And of course Rupert Mannion had hired him with an ulterior motive. And of course, like always, Nate had been horribly in the wrong all along.
"I'm so sorry."
"Shh, hey now, it's all right."
"No, it's not. Don't say that. Don't."
"Don't forgive me. Not when I don't deserve it."
"Christ, Ted, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I was an idiot and a wanker and a jupock to you and to Will and to Colin, and I never should have said what I said. I never should have told Trent Krim about your panic attacks. I never should have doubted you cared about me or that you were qualified to coach the team. I never..."
"Nate, hey, enough of that. Look at me." It took Nate several seconds before he managed. He wiped his streaming eyes on his wrist, sniffling hard.
"I get why you did it," Ted said. "Hell, if I were in your place, I might have done the same thing. You were thinking about the team when you talked to Trent. And even if that wasn't the whole of it, you were hurting. I hurt you too, even if I didn't know I was doing it. I'm sorry for making you feel the way you did. And hey," Ted put a hand on Nate's shoulder, gripped it tight, like Nate had gripped Vizhnich's shoulder all those weeks ago. "Here or at West Ham, you're one heck of a coach, and I'm real proud of you. I'm sorry for not realizing you needed to hear that from me once in a while." His grip tightened.
"We've got a fair amount of I'm sorries on both sides, so let's say we call it even." It took three attempts to speak around the lump in his throat.
"You don't have to forgive me," he managed. "Not when I haven't earned it."
"Forgiveness is given," Ted said. "Trust is earned. And you never lost mine to begin with." His voice softened. "Only thing I'm asking you to do is forgive yourself, Nate."
I'll try."
Ted nodded. "That's all I ask." They stood in companionable silence for several long seconds before Nate cleared his throat again, wiped away the last of his tears.
"I should get back," he said. "Early training tomorrow." He checked his watch. "Today."
"Same here." Ted patted his pockets, then pulled out his phone. He typed something, and Nate's phone buzzed with a message containing a telephone number that Nate didn't recognize. I can't help you, he said, sounding genuinely dismayed by that. Rebecca probably can't either. Well, she'd probably help you kill Rupert if you asked her, but she can't take him down the way you need her to. But Trent can. That's his new number. He broke his old phone after he accidentally rode his bike into a river last month. Trent Krim. Of course. Nate felt like the weight of the world had finally been lifted from his shoulders, only to return 10 stone heavier. Didn't he leave the Independent? To write a book, Ted confirmed, but he's still got more sway than a Michael Bublé song over there, and he's far from Rupert's biggest fan. He'll help you take Rupert down without your boys getting hurt in the process. Nate swallowed. The Wonder Kid would have sulked more, been paranoid that Trent would be inclined to take Nate down instead because of the story Nate had leaked last spring, or that Ted was conspiring against him in revenge. It was Coach Shelley who nodded and said, "Thanks. Anytime. And hey," Ted offered his hand, smiling slightly, "see you on the pitch Saturday, Coach." His heart light for the first time in months, maybe in his entire life, Nate accepted it. "Right, Coach," he said, and smiled back. "See you then." The end.